Chapter 19. Petura. His sojourn in the city had lasted for 47 days. The January of 1919, icebound and powdered with snow, had flown past the Turbines, and now February had erupted in the form of a blizzard. On the 2nd of February, a dark figure with a shaven head covered by a black silk cap moved through the Turbines' apartment. This was Alexei Turbin himself, risen from the dead. He had changed considerably. Two deep lines had appeared on his face, at the corners of his mouth, seemingly forever. His complexion was waxen, and his eyes were shadowed and sunken, with a permanently gloomy and unsmiling expression. Just as 47 days previously, Alexei stood in the sitting room, his face pressed against the window, listening. And just as then, when he had looked out of the window and seen the snow falling and lights blazing in the sky as in an opera, he could hear the distant, muffled sound of gunfire. Grimacing painfully, he leant his full weight on his stick and looked out onto the street. He noticed that by some magic, the days had got longer and that there was more light outside, despite the raging blizzard that was sending millions of snowflakes cascading through the air. Under the silk cap, his head was beset with thoughts, grim and cheerless, but always lucid. His head seemed to him to be a light and empty vessel, as if it were some alien box sitting on his shoulders, so that these thoughts appeared to be coming from somewhere outside him, in a sequence that they themselves had determined. He was quite happy to be alone, standing looking out of the window. Petura, he thought. By no later than tonight, it will all be over, and Petura will have gone. But was he here at all? Or have I dreamt it all? I don't know. Impossible to prove one way or the other. I like Lariosik very much. He doesn't get in our way as a family at all. In fact, we need him here. I need to thank him for taking such care of me. But what about Chervinsky? God knows. It's never easy with women. Yelena's absolutely bound to get involved with him. But what's so good about him, apart from his voice? Yes, he has a marvelous voice. But surely when all's said and done, it's possible to listen to someone's voice without getting married to them, isn't it? But in any case, it doesn't matter. So what does matter, then? Yes, it was Chervinsky who was saying that they have red stars on their fur caps. I suppose all hell will probably break loose in the city, won't it? Yes, very probably. So, later tonight. The troop transports are probably already moving along the streets. Nevertheless, I'm going. I'll go in the daytime and I'll take... Ring! Grab him! I'm a murderer. No, I'm not. I fired at someone in the heat of battle, or maybe I just wounded him. Who does she live with? Where is her husband? Ring! Malyshev. Where is he now? Disappeared off the face of the earth. And what about Maxim and Alexander the First? As all these thoughts were streaming through his head, he was interrupted by the doorbell. Everybody had gone into the city, hastily completing their items of business while it was still light, and there was nobody in the apartment except for Anyuta.
If that's a patient for me, Anyuta, show him in.
All right, Alexei Vasilievich.
Somebody climbed the stairs behind Anyuta, took off his mohair coat in the hall, and went into the sitting room.
Please, come this way, Alexei said.
A scrawny-looking young man with a yellowish face and wearing an army jacket got up from his chair. There was a glazed, concentrated look in his eyes. Alexei, now in his white doctor's gown, stood aside for him to pass and showed him through to his study.
Please, sit down. How can I help you?
I have syphilis,
the visitor said in a hoarse voice, looking straight at Alexei with a gloomy expression.
Have you been having treatment?
Yes, I have, but it's been rather poor and slapdash. Not much help, really.
Who sent you to me?
The priest at St. Nicholas the Good, Father Alexander.
Who did you say?
Father Alexander.
What? Do you know him?
I have been to him for confession, and talking with the saintly old man has brought me considerable spiritual relief.
the visitor explained, looking out at the sky.
Treatment wasn't for me, or so I thought. God was punishing me for my terrible sins, and I had to endure it patiently, but the priest persuaded me that this was incorrect, and so I did as he told me.
Alexei made a thorough examination of the man's pupils, and then proceeded to test his reflexes. But the owner of the mohair coat's pupils turned out to be quite normal, just full of a dark melancholy. So, Alexei said, laying down his hammer, you're evidently a religious person.
Yes, I think about God and pray to him day and night. He is my only refuge and comforter.
Well, that's wonderful, of course, Alexei replied, looking his patient straight in the eye. And I respect that. But this is my advice. While you are being treated, put such persistent thoughts about God to one side. It seems they're becoming something of an idée fixe with you. And in your condition, that's harmful. You need fresh air, exercise, and sleep.
I pray at night.
No, you need to change that habit and reduce the time you spend praying. It will simply tire you out, and you need rest. The man submissively lowered his eyes. He undressed and waited naked for Alexei to examine him. Have you taken cocaine?
Among all the other revolting habits I used to succumb to, yes, but not anymore.
What if he's a crook? Alexei wondered. Perhaps he's having me on. Goodness only knows. I'll need to make sure that none of the fur coats in the hall have disappeared. Alexei took the hammer and drew a question mark on the man's chest with the handle. The white mark turned red. You must stop getting carried away by questions of a religious nature, and in general, you need to stop burdening yourself with all these oppressive thoughts. Please get dressed. Tomorrow I'll begin injecting you with mercury, and then in a week's time you'll have your first blood transfusion.
All right, doctor.
And no cocaine, or alcohol, or women.
I have given up women, and all poisons, and all nasty people, said the man, buttoning up his shirt. The evil genius of my life, the precursor of the Antichrist, has gone to the city of the devil.
My dear chap, please stop all that stuff, Alexei groaned. Otherwise you'll find yourself in a psychiatric hospital. What is this Antichrist you're talking about?
I'm talking about his precursor, Mikhail Semyonovich Spolyansky, the man with the black sideburns and the eyes of a snake. He has gone to the kingdom of the Antichrist in Moscow to raise the alarm and to lead a host of fallen angels to this city to punish it for the sins of its inhabitants, just like Sodom and Gomorrah.
By the fallen angels, you mean the Bolsheviks, I suppose?
Well, I agree.
Nonetheless, you must stop all that stuff. You will take bromide, 1 tablespoon 3 times a day.
He may still be young, but he's as depraved as any 1,000-year-old devil. He incites women to debauchery and young men to commit sinful acts, and the trumpets of war of the legions of evil are already sounding, and above the fields the face of Satan can be seen behind them.
Trotsky, you mean?
Yes, that is the name he has adopted. But his real name is Abaddon in Hebrew, and Apollyon in Greek, that is to say, the destroyer.
Seriously, I'm telling you, if you don't stop all this, you'll need to look out. It's becoming a mania with you.
No, doctor. I'm perfectly normal. How much do you charge for your sacred work?
Please, why do you keep on using this word sacred? I don't see anything particularly sacred in the work I do. I charge the usual fee for a course of treatment like everybody else. If you wish to become a patient of mine, you'll need to leave a deposit.
Very good.
The man unbuttoned his army jacket.
Perhaps you don't have very much money, Alexei muttered, looking at the threadbare knees on the man's trousers.
No, he's not a crook, he thought. Just deranged.
No, doctor. The money can be found. You are bringing solace to mankind in your own way.
And sometimes with great success. Don't forget to take the bromide correctly.
But total solace, dear doctor, will come only when we've arrived up there, the man said passionately, pointing towards the white ceiling. But just at this moment, A time of suffering is upon us, the like of which no one has ever seen before, and it will be with us very soon.
I am most grateful to you for that information. I have suffered enough already.
Oh no, Doctor, you mustn't talk too soon, the man muttered as he was putting on his mohair coat in the hall. For as it has been written, and the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood.
Now where have I heard that before? Alexei wondered to himself. Oh yes, of course, when I had that heartfelt talk with the priest. And now they've found each other. That's wonderful.
My sincere advice to you is to read the Book of Revelation less. I repeat, it's harmful. My very best wishes. 6 o'clock tomorrow, please. Anyuta, please show this gentleman out.
Please accept this. I really would like the person who saved my life to have something to remember me by. This bracelet belonged to my late mother.
But why? You don't need to do this. I don't want you to, said Yulia Rice, trying to push Alexei away, but he persisted and fastened the dark, heavy metal bracelet around her pale wrist. Yulia's hand, all of her indeed, now seemed even more beautiful than ever. The pink glow on her cheeks was visible, even in the semi-gloom. Unable to restrain himself any longer, Alexei put his right arm round Yulia, pulled her towards him, and kissed her several times on her cheek. As he was doing this, his weak hand dropped his stick, which clattered onto the floor by the legs of the table. You must go, Yulia whispered. It's time to go. There are troop transports on the streets already. Make sure you stay safe.
You are so dear to me, Alexei whispered. May I come to see you again?
Yes, please come.
Tell me, why are you alone, and whose is this photograph on the table, that dark-looking man with the sideburns?
That's my cousin, she answered, lowering her eyes.
What is his surname?
Why do you want to know?
You saved my life, I just want to know.
I see. Because I saved your life, that means you have the right to know things. His name is Spolyansky.
Is he here?
No, he's gone away. To Moscow. You're being very inquisitive.
Something stirred deep within Alexei, and he stood there for a long time, looking at the black sideburns and dark eyes. An unpleasant thought gnawed away at him more persistently than any others as he studied the forehead and lips of the chairman of the magnetic triolet. But he couldn't bring it into focus. Precursor. That unfortunate man in the mohair coat. What was it that was troubling him, gnawing away at him? What did it have to do with him, anyway? Fallen angels. Oh, it didn't matter. Just so long as he could come here again, to this strange, peaceful little house, with its portrait of the man with the gold epaulette.
You must go. It's time.
Nicole, is that you?
The brothers came face to face with each other on the lowest terrace of the mysterious garden by the other little house. Nikolka seemed somehow embarrassed, as if he'd been caught red-handed.
Ah, Alyosha, I've been to see the Naitours family, he explained, looking as if he'd been caught on a fence trying to steal apples.
Well, that was kind of you. Is his mother still alive?
Yes, and his sister too. You see, Alyosha, well, anyway.
Alexei gave his brother a sideways glance and didn't subject him to any more questions. The brothers walked half the way home in silence. Then Alexei said,
It seems that Petura threw us together onto Maloprovalnaya Street, doesn't it, Nicole? Oh well, we'll be coming here quite a lot in that case. But who knows what will come of it all, eh?
Nikolka's attention was immediately engaged by this cryptic utterance. Taking his cue, he asked,
What about you, Alyosha? Have you been seeing someone, too, on Maloprovalnaya?
But Alexei merely mumbled a reply, and raising his coat collar, disappeared inside it. For the rest of the way home, he didn't say another word. On this important and historic day, everybody, Mishlaevsky, Karas, and Shavinsky, was having dinner at the Turbins. It was the first time they had all sat down together for a meal since Torbin had returned home wounded, and everything was as it usually was, with one exception. There were no gloomy-looking, sultry roses on the table, since the shattered Marquis's confectionery shop no longer existed and had vanished into the unknown, to a place where, no doubt, Madame Anjou also lay at peace. And nobody sitting at the table was wearing epaulettes, all epaulettes having turned to dust and been blown away by the blizzard. Everybody was listening to Chervinsky open-mouthed, even Anyuta, who was leaning against the door, having joined them from the kitchen.
"What kind of stars?" Myshlaevsky asked morosely.
"Small, in the form of hat badges, five-pointed," Chervinsky answered, "on their fur caps. There's a whole mass of them coming, they say. In a word, they'll be here at midnight."
"At midnight, you say? How can you be so precise?"
But before Chervinsky had time to answer, there was a ring on the doorbell, and Vasilisa appeared. Bowing to the left and to the right, and shaking everyone's, particularly Karas's, hand warmly, Vasilisa went straight to the piano, his boots squeaking. With a beaming smile, Yelena held out her hand to him, and, with a peculiar little hop, he kissed it.
"Well, I never," thought Nikolka. "Vasilisa seems to have become much nicer since that money was taken from him. Perhaps," he continued in philosophical vein, "money stops people from being nice. Take this room, for example. Nobody has any money, and everybody's nice."
Vasilisa thanks them all most humbly, but he doesn't want any tea. Splendid. All splendid. Tee-hee. How snug it all is here, despite the appalling things going on. He thanks them all most humbly again, but no thank you. Vanda Mikhailovna's sister has come to stay with them from the country, and he has to go back downstairs very soon. He's come to give Yelena Vasilievna a letter, found just a minute ago in the letterbox by the front door.
"Considered it my duty to bring it to you. My deepest respects to you all."
With another little hop, Vasilisa took his leave. Yelena took the letter off to her bedroom.
"Can it really be a letter from abroad? I know about such letters. As soon as you pick up the envelope, you know what's inside. And how did it get here? There's no post at all at the moment. Even letters sent from Zhytomyr to the city only get here if brought especially by someone. How stupid, how absurd everything's become in this country. After all, the trains are still running, so I wonder why letters can't travel the same way, and why they get lost. But this one got through. Don't worry, a letter like this will make it, will find the right address. Warsaw. But the handwriting isn't Talberg's. I don't like this. My heart's beating so fast."
Although there was a shade on the lamp, everything suddenly became so unpleasant in Yelena's bedroom as if someone had ripped the colourful silk off the shade, causing the harsh light to shine directly into her eyes and creating a general sense of chaos. Her face changed, taking on the appearance of the ancient Virgin Mary in her fretted frame. Her lips were trembling, but forming into folds of contempt. Her mouth was twitching. Tearing the envelope, she took the sheet of grey, lined notepaper out and placed it in the pool of light.
"I have only just learnt that you have separated from your husband. The Ostromovs saw Sergei Ivanovich at the embassy. He was on his way to Paris, together with the Hertz family. They say he's getting married to Lydia Hertz. Strange how this chaos is affecting everything. I'm sorry you didn't leave the city as well. I'm sorry for all of you, trapped in the peasants' clutches. They seem to be saying in the newspapers here that Petliura is advancing on the city. We hope the Germans will stop him."
Crashing and thumping through the walls and door, draped with the curtain portraying Louis XIV, Nikolka's march resounded mechanically in Yelena's head. Louis was smiling, one arm thrust out, holding his cane entwined with ribbons. Someone rapped on the door with the handle of a stick, and Alexei came in. Seeing his sister's expression, he made the same face and asked, "From Talberg." Feeling ashamed and depressed, Yelena said nothing for a moment, but then suddenly she came to and pushed the sheet of notepaper across the table towards him.
"From Olya, in Warsaw."
He ran his eyes along the lines until the end, and then went back and read the opening again. Dear Lenochka, I don't know if this will reach you. Many different colors were reflected on his face. The general shade was saffron. His cheekbones were pinkish, and his eyes were at first light blue, but then turning black. I can't tell you what pleasure it would give me, he said through gritted teeth, to give him such a belt on his ugly mug.
Who?
Asked Yelena, wrinkling her nose, onto which the tears were beginning to drip. Myself, said Dr. Turbin, beside himself with shame, for allowing myself to embrace him that time. Yelena burst into tears. Do me a favor, will you? He continued. Send that horrible object there to the devil, he said, jabbing at the photograph on the table with the handle of his stick. Sobbing, Yelena handed the photograph to him. In a flash, he had pulled the photograph of Sergei Ivanovich from its frame and ripped it into pieces. Yelena started howling like a peasant woman, her shoulders shaking as she pressed herself into Alexei's starched shirt front. Out of the corner of her eye, she looked with a sense of superstitious terror at the brown icon, in front of which the lamp in its gold holder was still burning.
Yes, I prayed to you, and I know I set conditions. Well, please don't be angry with me. Don't be angry, Holy Mother of God, thought the superstitious Yelena.
Alexei became alarmed.
Shh, not so loud. They'll hear you, and that wouldn't help.
But no one in the sitting room had heard anything. Nikolka had just finished crashing out the two-headed eagle march on the piano, and everyone was laughing.